Hello and welcome to Distillations, weekly extracts from the past, present, and future of chemistry. I'm Robert Hicks. This week, in honor of the holiday season, we're offering a toast to all things chemical, from carbon dating to chemistry sets. We'll learn what gives a sparkler its spark and what gives bubbly its bubble. That's all coming up on Distillations. The holidays are rife with scientific marvels. There's fruitcake, the semi-fermented wonder, LED Christmas lights that let you show your holiday spirit while reducing your carbon footprint, and of course, all those plastic toys, showing us the best and worst of what polymers can do. But since we're in a mood to celebrate the launch of our podcast, we thought something a little bubbly might be in order. We'll hear more about what gives that New Year's champagne its sparkle in just a minute. But first, for those of you who prefer cola to Cristal, we have the element of the week, phosphorus. Depending on where you're from, your favorite carbonated beverage might be a soda, a pop, or a Coke. The names soda and Coke are obvious, but where does pop come from? It turns out it's from phosphoric acid, the source of that characteristic tart flavor in cola drinks. Recently, some public health advocates have expressed concern that the phosphoric acid in soft drinks may be connected to lower bone density. But since soft drinks often replace milk in the diet, causality isn't clear. The acid is popular with soft drink producers because it's inexpensive and available in large quantities, and when used correctly, can mimic the flavor of more expensive seasonings such as ginger or citric acid. Although phosphorus doesn't naturally occur in elemental form because of its high reactivity, the human body, and indeed all living things, contain considerable amounts of it. It's found in bones, in DNA and RNA, and in ATP, the cellular unit of energy. A typical adult body actually contains more than 1 kilogram of phosphorus and excretes about 1 to 3 grams each day. Phosphorus was first discovered in urine in 1669 by the German alchemist Hennig Brand. The white substance he isolated glowed in the dark, a phenomenon we now know as phosphorescence. It also burned brilliantly, which led to one of phosphorus's common uses as a sparking agent in matches and incendiaries, and of course in fireworks. And that's the element of the week. You can learn more about phosphorus and other stories you've heard on our show by visiting our website, distillations.chemheritage.org. You're listening to Distillations. I'm Robert Hicks. And now, in true holiday spirit, we raise our glasses to the most sparkling of celebratory beverages, champagne. Distillations producer Robin Sussingham has this story on the science behind the bubbly.
Celebrations undoubtedly call for champagne. It's just so fabulous and festive and bubbly. And it's all thanks to the discovery that it's okay to keep one of fermentation's byproducts, carbon dioxide, inside the bottle rather than letting it escape. And it's true, size really does matter, at least when it comes to champagne bubbles. Connoisseurs say smallest is best. There are even chemists who've made a career of tiny bubbles. To find out more about champagne's special properties, I sat down with a couple of bottles and Jimmy Mila, my local wine expert and the owner of Vintage Wine Cellars.
What have we got chilling over there?
We have got a true champagne chilling here.
Champagne and wine start out life the same way. Yeast digests the sugar found in grape juice, converting it to ethanol and carbon dioxide. The CO2 escapes, leaving a still wine. But for sparkling wine, there's a second step. The secondary fermentation.
And now I'm going to open the André California Champagne that we have.
The cheaper sparkling wines, like this $4 bottle of André Brut, will be re-fermented and the CO2 trapped in large 10,000-gallon vats. It's carbonated before it's bottled.
I'm twisting a cap on a plastic cork. And it came right out, and large bubbles are rising to the top.
Wonderful.
Now listen to my Laurent Perrier Champagne. It's re-fermented in the ancient Method Champenoise. Yeast is added to the wine in the bottle, and it spends more time mixing and fermenting in the wine. It adds complexity and gives rise to a very different kind of bubble.
And you can see much more of a foam rises there, and that foam stays on the top, not like over here where it dissipated very quickly.
It's more gentle.
And then notice here how many bubbles are coming up. Much smaller bubbles, much more numerous bubbles, and as we wait and see, they'll keep coming up.
The smaller bubbles in the good stuff don't just look different. The whole experience is different. The effervescence sends up a rush of tiny explosions filled with aroma and flavor. They give the drink romance. How many chemical byproducts can do that?
More people like the smaller bubbles, and it's just more pleasing.
It's fun.
It's fun.
Cheers.
Cheers.
For Distillations, I'm Robin Sussingham.
Robin Sussingham is a Florida-based science writer and independent audio producer. And that's it for this episode of Distillations. This week's quotation is from Graham Greene's 1969 novel, Travels with My Aunt. Champagne, if you are seeking the truth, is better than a lie detector. It encourages a man to be expansive, even reckless, while lie detectors are only a challenge to tell lies successfully. Distillations is a presentation of the Chemical Heritage Foundation and is made possible by the generous support of the Richard Lounsbery Foundation. Mia Lobel is our senior producer. Our assistant producer is Victoria Indeviro, and our executive producer is Audra Wolf. Our theme music is composed and performed by Dave Kaufman. Additional music provided from the PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com. Please tell us what you think about our program and send suggestions for future shows to distillations@chemheritage.org. Until next time, I'm Robert Hicks.